Okay, boys and girls, time to wake up. Go out, shake off that stuff. Get ready, it's time to go fishing. Yes, it is, indeed. And the music's getting louder, and the voices are getting more extravagant.
It's only one voice, Frank. Around. Nobody said anything but you.
Well, that's why there's voices.
The rest of those are in your head, sir.
Oh, that's where they are. The ones I'm not supposed to listen to.
Right, the ones no one else can hear.
Yeah,
the ones that tell you the secrets.
Okay, yes, I know those voices. All right, Fish and Frank in the chair here. My multiple Fish and Franks in the chair here. Robert in the chair across from me. And as you might have heard, Josh Olive in the guest seat today. We're going to be getting on with our fishing report. We've got a lot of area to cover today, and there is a lot going on. The red tide actually seems to have cleaned up the water a little bit from what I'm hearing.
It's made it a lot clearer out there.
Yes or no, Josh?
As far as I could see, yeah, things were pretty.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing everything looking pretty, kind of pretty out there.
Yeah, nicer. Clearing up and doing the things that it's supposed to do in wintertime. And
well,
except for the temperature. Never mind that.
Yeah, it's one of the things that, the only reason I bring it up, a lot of people, we know all the disastrous, hideous, bad things about red tide. And there are some good offshoots of it. It does not only, you know, kill fish, but it does kill some algaes and bacterias and actually a lot of other stuff. And it causes other toxic things to kick off sometimes that actually kill even more of these little obnoxious things. And so we see the desolation, but sometimes it's a cleansing as well.
Right, because for every fish that you see floating on the surface, there might be a million little organisms out there, some good, some bad, that died, that you never really take into account. And those things do murk up the water to some effect.
Yeah, so anyway, it does seem to have a pretty good effect. And now the one thing that's unique about Charlotte Harbor, not unique, but special, it's special that it has a lot of pelagic fish. We have fish that don't live here.
Right, it's a nursery.
Well, not even if you exclude the nursery aspect, the trout, the Spanish mackerel, all these other fish, pompano, all these
sharks
that don't actually live here but come here often to visit, and, you know, we get to play with them while they're here. So once the red tide backed off, it was only a few days, things started picking up, and now it's been a couple of weeks, and things are looking a lot better. So how are they looking up on the Peace River? Anybody have any ideas?
It's been pretty good up there, actually. The Shell Creek area has held a lot of redfish of assorted sizes, mostly smaller guys, but a handful of legal size fish. Been some assorted tarpon from little juveniles up to like 60, 80 pounders. Obviously a lot of catch and release snook, but most of them are on the peanut size anyway. And then as you move kind of over towards the Harbor Heights side, I'm hearing of same amount of like little snook, some small redfish. But the whiting are starting to move in a little bit more up there around some of those little islands and some of those little deeper holes. So it's kind of a mixed barrage of things going on up there.
Yeah, and I haven't had the opportunity to go up the Peace at all, but I have talked to some guys who've been up the Myakka, and they're reporting basically the same stuff.
We're gonna get the Myakka.
Hey, come on, rivers are rivers.
Peace River.
All right.
Anything around I-75 before we head down to 41?
Been a few black drum there, but nothing really to jump up and down about. It's been so warm that the trout haven't moved up there in any good numbers yet, but we'll start seeing that change shortly, I think.
All right, taking us down to the 41 bridge.
Josh?
Well, the last thing I had from the 41 bridge was a guy who was catching black drum, and he was surprised by the size range that he was seeing. He caught first two fish that were about 14 or 15 inches, and then caught one that was probably pushing 35, 40 pounds.
Right.
So it's been a lot of that down there. I also talked to a friend of his who was catching a few whiting. He thought they were redfish and was wondering why they didn't have any spots, and when he showed me the pictures, I explained to him what he was actually getting. So.
Was he releasing them is the question.
He was, because he thought they were little redfish.
There you go.
Well, yeah, the other one that I've people confuse with redfish is the Atlantic croaker.
Which does have a spot, which really throws people. And then there's a spot.
Yeah. And there's several of these smaller fish that look a lot like redfish, and it can get quite challenging to tell them all apart. As long as we're in the area, what's going on at Lashley Pier? I haven't heard a thing. I don't know.
Honestly, it's been very quiet down there. There's been a couple guys fishing there in the evenings and catching a couple really small mangrove snapper.
The whiting should be kind
it
of in
should
there.
Should be, but I haven't heard it. Little trout, I've heard some little trout.
Little trout
but
and
nothing
little
else.
Mangrove snapper. I mean,
really getting excited over.
Yeah, it's been odd. It's been a very odd year for that over there.
Right. That I guess that takes us over to Bayshore Pier again. I know people are fishing there, but I haven't gotten much for reports on it.
I haven't gotten anything for a report this week at all on it, to be
all
honest.
I've heard are stingrays.
Well, they're stingrays. Actually kind of fun.
It's still fun.
Yeah, yep. I mean, stingrays are a blast as long as you don't get stuck by them.
Well, and that's the whole thing. It's kind of like catching catfish. I'll fight anything that wants to bend my rod. But, you know, I don't like dealing with them when they get up.
Well, that's why I keep one of those fish gripper things, that aluminum double-jawed piece thing on my boat, because that way I catch catfish, they're just fun. I don't have to worry about them. I catch them and release them, or, you know, if somebody wants to eat them, I'll fillet them out for them. But, you know, if you have the right tools for the catfish. But I don't think there's a right tool for a stingray. Maybe that one kind of squeeze hook remover that rolls the hook back.
Yeah, that works out actually very well on them.
Because when it grabs
you
the hook,
you want to flatten the barb on the hook.
Yeah, but
it makes it a lot easier.
You don't know you're getting it until you've got them. But
right,
I would say that long, it's got a long bar in it and squeeze handles, but it actually rotates the hook backwards as you squeeze the handles. And
fish hook extractor is what it's
called. The fish hook extractor, yeah. That would be the only thing I could think of that would make dealing with stingrays a little safer.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything
else. My simple rule is to keep it at arm's length and cut the line by stingray.
I can't say that's a bad...
No, it's a very safe thing to do.
Safe thing. The only thing I could think of is those fish extractors. I've got them on my boat. They last forever. They're a little expensive. They're like, what, 40, 50 bucks or 30 to 50 bucks?
39 bucks for the big one.
So 40?
Where's that
my
range?
Chops over a dollar here?
Two
Come
different
on.
Sizes. Two different sizes.
Yeah. $39.95, not 40.
You're the one that comes up with the prices.
it reminds me of when Shimano came in the last time they did the Stratix, and he says, oh, you know, we got a new Stratix coming out. I said, let me guess. The last one was white, so this one's going to be what? Silver? The last one was $180, so this one will be $200? He says, no, $199.
Yeah,
says,
good
you're,
deal.
You're right. Yep. How could I have been that far off? <You know? laughs> I mean, white to silver, silver to white, you know, 20 bucks at a time. Like, what, they think we don't notice this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, it's been a pattern for what? 12, 15 years?
I'm waiting for him to put a wooden handle back on it. That's when I'll be interested.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, the Port Charlotte Canal System. Anything going on up there?
A lot of jacks. Been quite a few jacks moving through the mouths of the canals. Been a handful of redfish being caught at night. Some of these guys that are fishing the snook lights. Been catching a few, you know, the 20 to 24-inch range redfish. A few mangrove snapper, but most of them are small. And then over more towards the beach complex area, the mouths of those canals, I've been hearing of some small black drum in that 14 to 20 inch range. So a little bit of a mixed bag of stuff.
Yeah, and there are some little tarpon in there, especially when you get into the back of beyond in those canals where you're not even really sure if you're fishing a saltwater canal anymore. They're running into tarpon mostly in that, let's say, 14 to 24 inch range, the little ones that you want to catch on a 5-weight fly rod.
That'd be fun.
That's pretty cool.
That'd be real fun.
Guy
actually
came in, he had a picture of, it was literally probably about a 4 to 6 inch tarpon.
Yeah.
A little tiny one.
Yep.
Caught over there.
Cute.
Little Alligator Creek.
Woolly buggers for them.
El Jameen Pier, anything going on over there?
At night, they've been catching some snook, a few mangrove snapper that are a little bit bigger. During the daytime, it's mostly been some small mangrove snapper and a handful of sheep's head.
Which guys are getting really, really excited about that handful.
Yeah.
Way too excited.
Yeah.
What's that now?
That little, the handful of sheep's head that are there, guys are getting, you know, real tickled to have them there. That's one of the locations that I'm starting to hear about guys taking their bows out there and looking to bowfish those things.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I got the same report yesterday. Was it yesterday I was talking to you about it, or the day before yesterday?
I don't remember. Time is irrelevant to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's becoming a real serious trend lately with guys bow fishing off of some of these piers around here.
I have heard a lot about it, and, you know, we tried to get some bows for in here, but it's really not my thing, and I'm not sure.
I'm not really big proponent of it personally, because I mean,
oh, I don't mind it, you know, because with the bend in the water, you know, you're going to be trying to, you know, shoot fish. You're going to eventually, you'll probably get pretty good at it, but you're going to put a lot of work into it.
Sure. Yeah, but guys, what about the 11 inch sheep's head that's 10 and a half inches and you just killed it?
I get it.
You know, that's where I have some issues with it. You know, these guys are taking fish that they shouldn't be, you know, so.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of, let's say, guys who are trying to be commercial fishermen with cast nets on the piers who think anything they catch is legal.
Yeah. Right.
Because they bought a saltwater products license.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm a big proponent for raising the price of that license.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad plan at all.
Way up. I mean, to like $500. All right. Micah Cutoff, Cattle Dock Point, Tippecanoe Bay. Anything?
Can I tell you about the canals of Gulf Cove? Is that close enough?
We're almost there. Next one.
Okay. All right.
Next one.
I'm excited.
So yeah, that's a good thing.
All right.
I'm really hopeful because we've had a lot of no reports, you know, minimal reports. I'm really hopeful to get that. But anything in, I've heard of small redfish, quite a few of them in the cutoff.
Yeah, a lot of small redfish with a couple legal ones, but just barely. Then there's also been a lot of snook going through there. I've heard of a couple pompano at the north end up kind of towards the Tippecanoe, that whole little basin right through there from the top northern mouth, I guess, of Myakka Cutoff. But nothing of substantial numbers, just kind of bycatch while they're playing. Looking
anything
for
going on the river? Oh, a couple weeks ago we had some pompano and some bonnets and stuff like that, yeah. But I haven't heard anything this week.
I haven't heard anything at all on
redfish.
On the flat there.
Redfish up the river, yeah. Okay. Those little canals up inland of Elgebeen, there's been some redfish in those. Some guys catching redfish out on the flat. They're all smaller fish, though. I mean, we're talking about 20 inches is a big one. So, you know, circle hooks.
It's still not a bad report, though.
No, it's not. And they're abundant.
That place holds so many fish up there. It just surprises me the few reports that you actually get up above Elgebeen.
Well, a lot of people they just don't fish it. You know, Elgebeen is like some kind of a wall or something that prevents people from going further up the river.
Well, since it used to be very, very popular, and we had those one group of eco nuts that decided it had to be idle speed up there. So once you get out of Charlotte County, as soon as you hit Sarasota County, it is idle speed. And that just destroyed the river for as far as a functional environment, because it's a very large area, and idle speed it takes forever to get anywhere. So once you're down in the Charlotte County end of it, we actually had some pretty good commissioners who actually blocked it when they heard it was coming up, because it was for no reason through the main body of that river. There was absolutely no reason for it to be idle speed. It was an eco assault, because somebody believed that this was going to do some good for something, but it really just had the effect of, making it not accessible to the public.
Right.
And there's not a lot of wildlife in it. There's fish in it. But I'm still of the proponents that the outboard motors are saving some of the areas. They are not good for the area, but they are in kind of on the roundabout, the prop wash and the other stuff helps get some of the funk out of there. And it really, while it's not good, it is definitely has some benefits. And I've seen it around the harbor. I am absolutely positively against any no motor zones, only slow speed zones in Charlotte Harbor, because of, you know, back on the flats, because we need the outboards. It's the only thing keeping the flats thatched or cleaned out, in my opinion, because I've seen what happens in areas where they don't allow outboards. Desolation, absolute desolation. So anyway, getting around to the South Gulf Cove Canal.
Hey, there we go. Okay. Yeah, now I was in there yesterday. I had some fish coach clients that wanted to fish that area.
Okay.
And we found a lot of fish in there. We didn't get them to cooperate quite as well as we would have liked, but we didn't have the best conditions either.
What kind of fish were they?
Redfish up underneath the docks. We saw some snook swimming around out there, and we saw lots of tarpon rolling. Not seeing a lot of tarpon rolling this time of year, I know, because of the water temperatures, but it's fairly warm in those canals, so we did see fish coming up and rolling around. Also had some miscellaneous fish that were hard to identify along some of the reed edges coming up and popping baits inside the reed beds or just outside. And I'm not sure if the water in there is fresh enough to support bass and sunfish, but
oh, absolutely. But I would say the most likely suspect would be some tilapia and stuff like that right along the reeds in that kind of brackish area between where it's fresh enough for the freshwater fish, you know. But there's some monster sized tilapia, and then you also have paku piranhas, and you
right.
have there is such a diversity of species back there that I think you're hitting on the money. But I think
my thought on it was maybe Mayan cichlids, since they were coming up and definitely doing those heavy topwater hits.
Yeah, but so do the tilapia, the cichlids. There's so many of them over there that do that. Even the pacus do that. And they're the most likely suspect in that brackish area. They seem to tolerate salt better than our native freshwater fish.
Yeah, yeah, they do. They definitely do, no question. Anyway, those guys went back out this morning when conditions were a little bit better. They had a little bit better tide, and they sent me pictures of the redfish and the snook that they were catching, doing the exact thing that I was showing them, which is basically pitching shrimp up underneath the docks. And they had a really good time out there this morning. So lots of fish in there, and a lot of gators. Way more gators than I remember being from the last time I was in there.
That had to do with the beginning and middle of 2016. We had so much rain and so much fresh water, they kind of moved into there. And then as soon as the rain stopped, we had drought conditions like we have now, and so the water holes are dying up, but there's enough fresh water still to entice them into the canal. So not only do you have gators that came in there because it was fresh from the rains, now you're getting gators moving in there because it's some of the last vestige of fresh water. Their ponds are drying up, so they leave. And gators will travel miles overland, from what I understand.
Yeah, many miles.
Yeah.
So,
well, these gators are having it good. Somebody's obviously feeding them based on how quickly they were wanting to approach us. So, and not just one gator. All the gators we saw wanted to come right up.
Well, people forget they got the brain the size of a pea, and if you're feeding them, they're not really sure whether you're giving them food or if a piece of you is falling into the water.
Right. You might be a fruit tree as far as they're concerned, except pieces of meat come off you.
Exactly. So it's really a bad idea to feed gators. Okay, coming down the west wall, what's going on the west side of the harbor? Okay. As Robert says, what do you think of me now? Yes, it is. We're back going to
the west wall.
We're trying to figure out what kind of fish are there and what's happened on the west wall here lately. A
lot of redfish and snook scattered along the bushes over there. Underneath the bushes, just outside on the flats, they're kind of peppered up and down the whole thing. Even getting a few reports of some short cobia on the flat there, with a few occasional pompano and an oddball bonnet head. And it seems to get fishier as you're going a little bit further south, just because it's been so blooming warm lately. You know, a couple weeks ago we were starting to see them move up north a little bit, but now they seem to have dropped back down a little further south. You know, so it's been it's good. It's just you got to move a lot.
Yeah, and I'll second that on the pompano. I talked to a guy who was going up there to try to fish the tree edges and couldn't get his boat up there because he didn't have enough water. So he was running on the outside of the bar and on the inside whenever he could skip up in there, and he said that he was definitely seeing pompano jumping in his wakes. Unfortunately, he was not able to turn any of those jumping pompano into pompano on the boat.
Flopping pompano?
Yeah, yeah. But I think that that he just wasn't really quite sure what to do about them. You know, didn't really have a technique for how am I going to actually catch those fish.
Right.
I go back to the popping cork, not popping cork, but bobber thing on it. Because pompano are notoriously hard to get into, but I'll throw a small bait under a bobber, even a crappie jig with a little piece of shrimp on it, or one of those silly jigs under a float if there's a little bit of wind where the waves are bouncing around a lot. The bobber bouncing up and down on the waves makes the jig go up and down. If you got a little tiny piece of shrimp, and especially the lighter silly jigs with the teaser feather on it, little tiny piece of shrimp on the hook itself under a float's a great way to get pompano interested in it. And then have your other rod just as a, you know, cast and try and do more of the traditional cast and hook for the pompano. But it's worked well for me over the years. Or even just a small hook with a piece of shrimp meat on it, or very small shrimp. But peeled shrimp meat or very small shrimp seem to be the better thing. Or little tiny bait fish.
I like the popping cork way too. I mean, like you're talking about, that for me personally, when I see them skip, has been a little bit more productive, and especially since you can cover the area, because you can throw that out there and wait, and then fan cast too at the same time.
Yeah, the problem that I have is when I'm casting, I can get 10 or 15 casts in, and I'm like, no, okay, they're not here. You know, I right. cast, all right, forget right. this. But if I get a bobber out, a bait out, I'm more likely to stay in the area and work it a little bit more. It's kind of like my anchor to the spot for a little bit. And I think that's one of the reasons it's effective for me. K-Pays, Muddy Bay, the K-Pays Bar, the K-Pays Shoreline, anything going on down there?
I've heard a few bonnethead sharks, thinking that they're out there like little hammerheads cruising around, pretending like they own that and that they're going to charge you a penalty for going past it.
Yeah, there's been some bonnetheads out there. A lot of undersized trout. Been a few ladyfish scattered around out there. Muddy Bay, I've heard of a couple really good sized redfish in there, but that's it. It's like a couple guys come and say, I caught two really good sized redfish that were just barely over slot, and that was all they caught in there all day. It was kind of been a little strange.
All right, now that's going to take us over, and the fishing coach, Josh, what is your thoughts? Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, which one's better, which one's worse? Are they the same? Or should you skip it altogether because there's nothing there? Or is it full of fish?
Well, there's plenty of fish there, but it just kind of depends what you want to do. Okay. I mean, you know, a lot of guys have real trouble with going back in there and fishing those spots because they don't know them very well. You know, and they're worried that they're going to ground their boats out. And you can very easily go in there and run yourself aground if you don't understand the area.
One simple rule. Keep it slow, stupid.
Right, right.
If you're going slow, you're going to be fine. You cannot run aground hard enough to hurt yourself.
Exactly.
If you have to travel at 30, 40 miles an hour, yes, you're probably going to have problems. I know I have done it. I've spent 2 hours pushing a boat off a mud flat because I missed a little cut by about 2 feet, launched the boat in the air, and came down in the middle of a mud flat with 10 inches of water, or 4 inches of water and 10 inches of mud I had to push the boat out of.
How smart did you feel when you did that, by the way?
I don't think it really affected my psyche whatsoever.
Oh, maybe that's one of your things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to be a little more self-aware than I am. You actually have to go, yeah, I don't care. You know, if I wasn't pushing a boat, I would have been doing something goofy like fishing or something.
Right.
But the fun part was teaching the wife how to, you know, properly do the African queen off of one of those flats.
Uh-huh.
And that is you give somebody a rope and you have them walk out in a semicircle until they find a little bit deeper water. You push on the back and they pull the rope towards the deeper water. Because if you're just pushing, you might be pushing to shallower water. Mm-hmm. You right. need to have somebody out front of the boat guiding you to deeper water all the time. That's a big mistake I see people make. They go to push off and then end up in shallower. Tie rope to the front of the boat, have one of you just walk out, and when you get to a spot, okay, there's a little deeper water, you found it, then they start pulling the rope to guide the boat there, and you're on the back of the boat pushing.
And here's a piece of really simple advice. When you're out there exploring these places, have shoes in the boat. They can be just simple sandals. They don't have to be wading boots, but have something that you can put onto your feet. Don't be out there barefoot all the time.
Something that you can tie tight to your feet so if you get in the mud, they stay there.
Yeah, real shoes are definitely better.
Sandals and all that kind of stuff, they're no good for getting you out of bad spots. You need laceable shoes, something you can actually tie to your feet.
My Tevas have served me pretty well in some of those sticky situations, so I'll argue with you on that. But,
okay.
But they shouldn't be high heels, I can tell you that much.
No, whenever you wear your high heels in a boat, Josh, it always upsets me. You know, those pumps of yours just, they don't do well.
Well, not least because then I'm 8 inches taller than you.
Yes, I know. Okay, Bull Bay. Turtle Bay. Was there fish there or not?
Yes, there's been quite a few fish in there. In fact, I've even talked to some guys who said they were seeing schools of tailing redfish in there. Now, we're not talking about the dense schools that we had in the fall. We're not talking about 200 fish out there, but getting into schools of a dozen, maybe 20, absolutely very possible. Of course, tailing redfish requires shallow water, so again, we're dealing with situations where you can do bad things to your boat if you're going in there too fast. But going in there slow, the other thing I tell people, if you don't know those areas, go in one of two situations. Go in either on a rising tide and plan to get out as the tide is turning around and starting to fall. That way you have more water than when you left.
Okay, I will translate that for you, boys and girls. Go there at low tide. Because when you go there at low tide, you always have more water. If you get there at high tide, you have less water because the water's going out.
So. Or go out and explore on a really, really super low tide. That way, you're going to see all the spots where you can't get into.
Is that different than me saying low tide?
It's a little bit different.
A little bit different?
A little bit different.
There is a dialogue.
He's using your analogy of Lewis and Clark.
It's kind of like $39.95 versus $40.
I'm just busting your chops.
That's fine.
I agree.
It's your radio show. Do what you want.
Yeah, I agree. There is. The lower the tide, the more I go looking for fish. Because you get to learn where the highs and lows are, where the troughs, where the holes are.
Right.
You can visually see it, map it out in your
head.
But
there's a massive difference between going in there when you have a tide that's like a 0.9 going up to a 1.7 versus going in there on a negative 0.5.
Exactly.
For what you're going to see on the bottom. And that's why they're two separate things.
All right. So is there a difference between a negative tide and a full-blown 2.0 at the Cape Hayes Reef? Was actually a question.
I'm not sure. I just feel like at this point you're trying to trip me up. You or one of your other personalities is trying to pull one on me.
It's the voices I'm listening to. They come out of my head. They work like this. I don't know why it happens. Okay. No, the Cape Hayes Reef. Is there any fish there?
Mangrove snapper, then some Spanish mackerel, then some, for us, relatively good-sized bluefish. You know, and relative to us is very, very relative term. All these guys are used to 15 and 20 pound bluefish. Our bluefish here are 1 to 3 pounds. A 4 pounder is a giant. You know, so, but there's been some good ones there. It's been pretty surprising.
All right. Go around the corner to, like, Devilfish, the backside of Kaopalu, the tailing flats going over towards, you know, Catfish Creek there on the east side of the ICW.
More bluefish there. Bluefish have actually been pretty abundant all through Gasparilla Sound. Anywhere you have those grass flats, guys who are going out trout fishing, hoping that that's what they're going to catch, are finding that they're losing a lot more lures than they had planned to because the bluefish are coming up and chomping them off. If they're not losing whole lures, they're at least losing the back half of their soft plastics. So you got to be prepared for those. You either need to bump up your fluorocarbon to something considerably stouter, I like 60, or put on a little piece of wire. Just a little piece is all you need.
I would say the AFW knotable steel, that tieable steel, because that way you can just tie on a little bit of that leader
right. Instead
of, you know, having to make drastic changes.
You really, with that wire, you only need 4 or 5 inches of bite tippet. That's all that's required.
I cut about a 2-foot piece at a time, because by the time I tie the knots, if it's really tiny, I can't get the knots tied. I'm tying a uni knot to my hook or to my lure. I'm tying a uni knot to attach it to the line. You know, so I want a little bit of freedom of not tieability.
Well, sure,
there.
But you get a price break on that wire.
Yeah. of course I do. But there are benefits to being me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, all poor right. Guys like me are trying to use as little as possible.
Yeah, okay. Gasparilla Sound and tailing flats. We've determined that a bluefish where the trout are supposed to be. What else would be on the tailing flats?
Sheep's head. sheep's head are around several of the oyster patches there in Wooden Bay, and all along the perimeter of all the mangrove islands there, from basically the back entrance into Bull Bay all the way over to Catfish Creek. Hearing some just pretty good reports of them all over through there.
Okay. Anything up against the Boca side? Anybody heard anything about Boca? I haven't heard anything about the inside of Boca since the red tide.
It's picking up, but it's nothing to jump up and down about yet.
Well, let's move down to Placita Trestle.
Well, wait a minute, though. On the inside of
Boca. Whoa, slower.
How far down do we go on the inside of Boca? Are you going all the way down to the pass, or are you just talking about the inside of the island?
Just along the inside of the island. We get to the passes in a while.
Okay, well, along the inside of the island, I've had some good reports of redfish on the docks.
Okay.
Especially the ones as you head towards the south end of the island, closer to the pass, but not in Boca Grande Pass. Guys are seeing a lot of redfish down there and catching a few. They're also seeing a few black drum mixed in there. I've also had some guys who said that they're spotting snook out there, kind of in more where we'd expect to see them in summertime, but it's been so warm, those fish have kind of moved back out towards the beach.
It is summertime to them.
I know.
Other than the summertime photo period.
So.
Yeah, but you dress like that in summer or winter. What difference does it make?
I was going to say, you can't tell from the way you dress,
no,
Josh.
Not at all.
You have the, you know, this is the way Josh dresses. That's it.
It's my uniform.
It's kind of like me when we get out of the truck at like the shows and stuff. And they're yelling and complaining about the truck being wherever it is, and, you know, somebody else gets out. Then I get out, and even from a distance, they know the sleeveless T-shirt,
right?
The scruffy look, the, you know, the bent back. That's fishing, Frank.
Right. He's got a hunch. He's got torn blue jeans.
Yes. Yes. The derelict. Oh, that's Frank. Okay. All right. We're up to the Placita Trestle here.
Sheep's head. Plenty of sheep's head. They're mostly teasing the guys. The guys are struggling catching them, but there's plenty of them there. Blue fish are still around. Been a few oddball bonnet heads and Spanish mackerel. The mangrove snapper bite, most of them during the day have been very small, but if you go there in the evening or at night, the guys that have been buying those frozen white bait that we have, the little pilchards, doing really good on like 1 pound, 1.5 pound mangroves on them. The guy was super excited about it, and then he took some, I told him to take some silver sides with him the other day, because that usually works really well when those mangs move in there. He hasn't come back to tell me if one's working better than the other, but he's going to give it a good shot.
There have been bait fish, not real tightly schooled, but kind of scattered between the trestles and the causeway, and we've had some ladyfish and some really good-sized jacks in there tearing them up. It's been concentrated enough action sometimes that we're getting large numbers of terns and gulls diving on them. So they're showing you right where the attack is happening.
Good-sized jacks like they are up here?
Good-sized jacks, yeah. 8 to 12-pound fish.
Nice. It's pretty amazing how they've all of a sudden turned around with some bigger jacks lately. You know, compared to what they were, you know, even last year at this time, there was just all little 1 to 3-pounders.
Yeah, and they grow fast, but they don't grow that fast.
No. Pretty impressive, though.
Well, I think when the commercial fishermen came and went to hit the mullet and the red tide and everything else, a lot of people got disgusted and went home. Otherwise, the jacks wouldn't be as plentiful.
Right.
But the smaller the jack, the higher the dollar value is on it. The larger jacks are not worth as much in the food industry. The small jacks are considered a delicacy. The larger ones are not. So
depends on your country of origin, sir.
Yeah, I get that. But I'm just, all I know is the price of fish. Yeah. I don't know the, you know. Lemon Bay, anything up there?
Guys are trolling through that miserable mile and picking up a few oddball Spanish mackerel. Not great numbers, but a few. And picking up a couple decent-sized trout while doing that, too. You know, 20, 22, 24-inch range. No massive numbers, but enough worth mentioning. And then as you get up closer towards the ski alley and that whole area around Stump Pass on the mainland side around all the docks, has been some undersized gag grouper. I've heard of two legal grouper caught. A lot of snook still sitting on them. I've heard of a couple incidental flounder. And a lot of trout around the perimeters of those docks, but most of them are on the smaller side.
heading over towards the Tom Adams Bridge. Guys have been catching some pompano out there. And, of course, it's a bridge. There's a pier, so there's going to be sheep's head there, too. Again, hearing guys bow fishing out there, hearing guys actually bow fishing to the point that the guys who are bait fishing are considering it a pest.
So at the Tom Adams Bridge, people are bow fishing quite a bit.
Yeah, Tom Adams and the Anger Pier, which runs right alongside the Tom Adams. Also, a lot of small gag grouper coming out of there, but I haven't heard of anything that was even close to keeper. We're talking about fish that top out at maybe 14 inches.
Okay.
Little fun size ones. Little ones that come up and eat your pompano jigs.
Anything outside of bow fishing for sheephead and small gag, small grouper?
A few pompano.
Some whiting. And then some snook and big ladyfish at night. You know, so it's been kind of a mixed gamut of stuff. You know, it's not gangbusters, but definitely along that whole area there has been a little more consistent because of the little cooler water temperature being cleaner and closer to the Gulf.
Okay. Well, how about out in the Gulf of Mexico? What's going on in the Gulf of Mexico?
What isn't going on out there would be really the question.
Starting from the surf, I mean,
no,
again...
Nope, just out in deep water.
Well, make up your mind.
No,
it
I am. I
Gulf
do.
Of Mexico.
Out in deep water. We do the beaches here in a little while.
Okay.
So catch up.
Deep water out there, 3 miles out plus.
Well, I can tell you this. The sheep's head that they've been expecting to see on the near shore reefs have not been the numbers that they were thinking were going to be out there. I've had a lot of guys tell me that they're going out, they're looking for triple tail on the crab trap lines, which the early birds are getting, the later birds are not. And then they're heading out to Mary's, to Tremblay, to the Novak, and figuring, okay, we're going to go out, we're going to catch some sheep's head, and they're just not finding them. They have been finding some snapper out there. Not, again, the huge numbers that we would like to see, but definitely some fish, and that's been better than the sheep's head bite out there.
Been some really incredible lanes and mangroves anywhere from 3 to 15 miles out. And like Josh was saying, you go to one reef, the guys are creaming them, good-sized fish, and then the next reef, it's all little guys like what you'd expect to catch from shore here. The king mackerel have been very spotty. They're still out there, but I think because it's gotten so warm, I think a lot of those fish turn around and headed north again for a little bit, so we may have another drove of them coming back through.
Now, I've still been hearing about some blackfin tuna, some permit. Any of those things still true?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But they're not the kind of thing that you can go out there and bank on. It's the kind of thing that you can go out there and keep both of your fingers and both of your toes crossed and hope real hard for. The guys who I've talked to who have been finding kingfish are the guys who've been going farther out looking to bottom fish some legal gag grouper. And they've been finding more like 30 miles.
Ooh.
They've been finding kings out there. So, you know, kings, amberjack, barracuda, all that stuff has
been
pretty good. Once you get into the deeper water, but, you know, you're going a long ways out there to find them. Now, I forgot to mention, on the nearshore reefs, the one thing that the guys are catching, and most people won't care about this, but I'm about to get somebody real excited, squirrelfish, sand perch.
Yeah, this is the second time in my years that I've gotten a massive amount of requests for what is these, are they good to eat? And, you know, what are they called? Are they good to eat? You know, are you allowed to keep them? And it's all about the squirrel fish.
Yep. And those guys are really easy to catch. You just have to downsize everything. You know, your fish are going to be 8 to maybe 12 inches long if you're fortunate.
You're perch fishing.
Pretty much. But sometimes you can perch fish with a sabiki rig and catch 5 or 6 at a time.
Right.
So, see, I knew somebody was getting excited. I said squirrel fish, and here comes senior.
Yeah. Exactly.
Did you
step up over here for a minute, senior? Tell us about those squirrel fish that you love eating so much.
Oh, they are the best eating fish that's out there.
Yeah.
Never throw them down for a grouper. You're just wasting the best food that's out there.
You got to step just a little bit closer when you're doing that. There you go.
Well, say it again.
Say it again. Sing it again. I will. Squirrel fish are the best eating fish in the Gulf.
Really?
Never, ever send one down for a grouper. Throw them in the ice chest, fillet them out. The meat is pure white, Stir fry it in brown butter. Nothing better.
But they're so tiny, Senior.
Well, so are yellow perch up north.
Don't catch the tiny ones. You catch the 8 and 10 and 12 inch ones. Don't fish for tiny.
Would you guys do conspire with this out in the parking lot? Because didn't you just say 8, 10, and 12 inches?
I know, right? Nope.
That's
this
funny.
This is unplanned.
What do we have here? We have Charlotte County's famous Joss Allen.
Yeah.
And world famous Fish and Franks.
Yeah.
World famous.
It happens every now and then.
Here's Robert. He's just...
Robert.
Robert's here.
Yeah.
Just Robert.
Robert's the brains of the place. Don't let nobody kid you.
Yeah. It's just Robert.
All right. As long as you're there, anybody heard about any fishing in the passes? Gasparilla Stump, Venice, anywhere?
Yeah, snooks.
Venice has been crickets.
Guys are reporting snook down there in Boca Grande Pass from the Placida Tres or this phosphate dock all the way around to the old broken down pier. And they're not just catching fish, they're also seeing fish, lots of fish, just swimming out there. It's surprising the number that showed back up out there.
It's almost like a June full moon kind of scenario with the little groups of fish that are coming through. They're swimming in 2s to 12s at a time. They're just in multiple sizes. It seems like there's a bunch of little buck snook with 2 or 3 big snook, and then just that one little group of bigger snook. It's kind of funny.
And there doesn't seem to be a lot of bait holding them there.
No.
They're just...
No, not at all.
They went there because it got warm.
Well, you never know. Anything besides snook in the passes or any other? Have you heard of any fishing in any of the other passes?
Boca and Captiva, along with some whiting and a few incidental pompano and flounders, just kind of side catches. Most of those seem to be being caught in the evening or right at first light in the morning. And then there's been a couple big bull reds coming through there on both those passes. It's been a mixture of stuff.
Yeah,
the weird part is no real sharks that I've heard of.
Just a few.
Yeah.
Now, are the tarpon still going on out there? Because I had several reports of tarpon the other day. Guys were doing good on tarpon in the passes.
I talked to one charter captain who said that he went out and marked a bunch of what he thought were tarpon, but he said he wasn't seeing fish rolling like he's accustomed to, so he couldn't tell for sure that that's what was going on. He assumes they were tarpon, but there were no tarpon bubbles coming up and they weren't rolling, which, is kind of normal for this time of year with the water temperature being cooler. But
I've heard of a few fish being hooked up down there in Captiva and Boca, but not steady.
Okay.
You think a squirrel fish would make good bait for that?
Squirrel fish don't use it for bait for anything. Eat them.
I'm just trying to rile him.
You have a hard time learning, don't you? You don't listen well.
See, you asked for it. You knew what you were going to get.
I did it on purpose.
Yeah, I know.
I regret nothing.
Okay, now that we are here to the point in the show where we do walking the beach. This could be Venice, Minnesota, Gasparilla, Captiva, any of the Gulf Shore beaches. If you're going to walk long casting out into the water with a lure bait, what would you be likely to catch? Or are you likely to catch anything?
Well, the guys who've been doing that looking for flounder and pompano have been finding fewer of those. But if you have like a pompano jig or something along those lines rather than a bottom fishing rig, then you can speed that up and fish it a little bit faster through the upper part of the water column, ladyfish and jacks. And also a handful of those bluefish, but mostly ladyfish and jacks. And most of the ones out on the beach haven't been those big ones. They've been smaller fish, more like that 3-pound range. But it's literally fish after fish after fish after fish. And when you get into them, catch until you're tired of catching.
Okay. I guess that would be good advice to anybody. Catch until you're tired of catching. All right. Now that we have those things out of the way, Robert, anything you can think of off the beaches?
Been some scattered whiting up and down all the beaches. I'm not hearing of great numbers, but it seems like they're a little bit better quality fish. And it doesn't seem to matter which beach it is, just kind of a hodgepodge.
Dad, do you know anybody who's been fishing along the beach?
No, I sure don't.
Okay. That's going to take us down one we have a separate thing for, and that's Ponarasa, Sanibel Island. Anything down there?
I got nothing.
Juvenile tarpon and snook with a couple adult tarpon right there at the causeway at night. And then underneath the docks right there in Ponarasa, there's been some small gag grouper and a few bigger trout on the outside edges of those docks. but it has been a little quieter than normal.
Rick's. So there is a bunch of snook and stuff under the docks.
Snook and gags with some trout on the outer edges of the docks.
Okay.
Yeah, it hasn't been. It's been weird with the reports down there lately. You know, we got to get a hold of Matt Haig and ask him what's going on down there. He knows that area pretty well.
Yeah, I'm going to be getting a hold of Matt here pretty quick. Matt Lachey, anything going on, Matt Lachey?
A lot of redfish scattered around down there, around the island itself. Or not the island, how am I doing? Around the bridge itself, up and down the shoreline and in the sand holes. And then the sheep's head have started to move in up to the bridge itself, but still kind of mixed reports down there. You know, I think most of our regulars are on vacation with that Christmas holiday or entertaining guests, so we haven't been seeing them nearly as much to get the real good skinny on that area. You know, there should be juvenile tarpon there in those Cape Coral canals, especially as hot as it is. They got to be rooting around down there in good numbers, I would think.
Okay. Pine Island Sound on the outside of Pine Island, along the ICW and the flats. Anything out there?
There's been tailing reds down there. If you can get into the areas where it's shallow enough for them, looking around the Captiva Rocks area, Captiva Shoals, guys have been finding quite a few fish over there. The average fish, again, is not real big. I mean, 20, 22 inches, maybe, but they are seeing some of those really big fish coming in from the Gulf. Not huge numbers of them, but, you know, you'll maybe see one of those for every 20 of the smaller fish that you catch. But I talked to someone who actually caught one that was 44 inches out there, which is just an enormous redfish, no matter where you are, and especially for this time of year and on the inside.
Been a lot of gag grouper being caught down in there too, from puppies to, you know, 28 inchers, some fairly good-sized fish. Some of those guys are fishing either some of those little man-made reefs down there that they know about, or some of those deeper sand holes and cuts. It's kind of been pretty good. You know, they've been throwing that subwalk in the new single hook one, the same one that they throw for tarpon.
Yeah, I was talking to Danny Latham the other day, and Danny was throwing the subwalks for the gag grouper and stuff. And one guy hooked a tarpon, and he told the other guy, well, he's going to be on there a while. He's got an 80-pounder on, it looks like. And so the guy's throwing, trying to get a grouper. And he hooked a very similar tarpon, so they had tarpon doubles on. And that was out in front of Boquilla. But it was all on that Rapala subwalk. That subwalk is still the hidden tarpon threat. I mean, it really hooks tarpon. But you got to work it. It's not an easier one like the DOA Baitbuster. Brings us up to the top of Pine Island, Boquilla, Jug Creek Shoals. Anybody heard anything up there?
Yeah, I heard they were catching tarpon on subwalks. You asked.
Yeah, I get it.
Now you know why he is only county famous.
All right, I'm rating it. Fella subwalks. Okay.
Now, up there, I have heard of some guys who thought they were getting into some tailing redfish around Jug Creek, and they were instead finding tailing catfish. So you want to be careful about what you're throwing that chunk of mullet or shrimp into. You know, it's great when it happens to be redfish, but when you're so sure that it's a redfish and it turns out to be a big old grunting slimy catfish, you're just going to be so disappointed. I'll laugh at you. I'll think it's funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I was down in the Keys, I was fishing a tournament, and you would never think you would mistake a cowfish for a bonefish, but from a distance, they look almost identical when they're tailing and they have their little tail up in the air.
Right.
They're, you know, once you've seen a half a dozen of them each time, you know, you've seen the bonefish do it, and then you've seen the cowfish, you can distinguish the difference. But for the first half a day, you chase down as many cowfish as you do bonefish.
Now, I imagine when you hook those cowfish, the run is a lot less exciting.
I don't know if that... You can hook them a little bit, but they're pretty small mouths. But they, you know, go right butt straight up and just, you know, work to get their face down in whatever they're eating. And
yeah, I've caught them at the Anger Pier on little pieces of shrimp. They don't fight.
No.
You may as well just pull oysters off the bottom.
I can imagine.
Big hard body, little tiny fins.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, fat guy in a little coat. That's the way it goes. Okay, going over to Burnt Store down to Two Pines. What's going on?
That whole flat there just south of Burnt Store is starting to pick up a little bit better. Some of the Wade fishermen have been getting some pompano, a few redfish, even a couple incidental flounder.
Handful of decent trout. Not many, but the ones that seem to be down there seem to be on the better side, 17, 19 inches, somewhere in that size range. Not huge numbers, but when you find them, they seem to be a little bit bigger down there.
Yeah, they're not concentrated in the schools by any stretch because of how warm it is.
Not at all.
I've heard of a couple incidental bluefish and Spanish mackerel, too, as you get a little bit further out towards that deeper water on the outside edge of the bar.
And also 6 million puffers.
Yeah, they've been great for the plastic sales, though.
I bet. Yeah. I mean,
especially when the guys come in and go, this bait's defective. Every one of the tails keeps falling off.
Yeah. That the puffer prevalence is the reason that I won't use the DOAs that have the different colored tails on them.
Exactly.
Because I get two casts out of it, and the tail's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something about that multicolored tail that the puffer fish always love to hammer.
Yep.
Yeah, the bright chartreuse tail or the yellow tail or the pink tail. They like that little flashy movement going up and down.
They
and
do.
If you're wondering if you're being attacked by puffer fish, as we're saying, a puffer fish doesn't really have teeth. Their teeth have molded around to look more like the beak of a parrot. And you don't see it when you look at them, but when they roll their lips back, there's a very sharp, curved bite that'll take out fingers, rulers,
if you ever want to see
eat chunks of wood.
What it's capable of doing, search for a YouTube video of pufferfish biting a soda can. They'll just literally take chomp, 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 chomp right out of that can.
Yeah.
I mean,
seriously?
It's a cruel thing to do to a puffer, because then he has a mouthful of aluminum, but it's a very impressive display of what they can actually do.
But the cool thing is when you're reeling your lure in, if you feel that, and then you come back and there is a notch out of it, a defined notch, that is the sign of a puffer fish because it is a rounded cut.
And if you want to actually catch those things, a little spoon, like a little Castmaster spoon.
Tiny, tiny.
Yeah, but it's got to have the hook all the way out at the end because that's the thing that he's going to grab for. And it helps with the Castmaster because the Castmaster moves fast enough that he can't get to the middle of it. He's always swimming after it trying to chomp the tail off. And the only reason to catch him, of course, is to make sea squab.
Sea squab?
Yeah. Never heard of sea squab?
Oh, that's the little thing inside of the puffer fish that if, as long as you clean it properly, you don't die.
Pretty much, yeah.
So yeah. As long as you're willing to sit there and make sure none of the liquid from the intestines.
It's a slightly dangerous treat. The only part of our southern puffers that's actually toxic is the gonads. So when you're cleaning your puffer.
I know exactly where that's at.
when you're cleaning your puffer, don't squeeze the gonads onto the meat and you'll be good to go.
I've made a career out of not squeezing gonads. I can promise you that.
Well, on one of those puffers, I've seen fellows take a fork and just rake the meat out of the back. So I don't know.
Right, just taking the back part to avoid the gonads completely.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, but you can take the whole tail section, and it makes like a little drumstick. Sea squab used to be a real popular seafood. They usually used a northern puffer to get it, but our southern puffers are quite similar, just a bit smaller.
How do you spell gonads?
G-O-N-A-D-S. Gonads.
All right. G-O-A-N-D-S?
G-O-N-A-D-S.
All right, so...
Where are you going, senior?
I must partake. I must leave.
All right.
Have things that go in place. Oh, one fast question.
What?
For the Gulf out there, why is it still 9 degrees above what it should be this time of year?
Something to do with air temperatures being 9 degrees above what they're supposed to be this time of year.
Yeah.
I knew you'd have the answer. You're just one of them knowledgeable fellows. Thank you very much.
You betcha.
Fort Myers broke a heat index record, or a heat record, yesterday, the day before. They were...
Both days.
Set a new record.
Yeah, they've set several new records, actually, including a new record for the hottest day in December.
Yeah.
Well, at least that's some here in Charlotte County, too. We've had some record days.
Yeah.
But it was 88 degrees. That was the hottest it's ever been down there at this time of year.
Roasty, roasty.
Yeah, so that may...
all the kingfish and everything around, ain't it?
Yeah, everything's going to be moving up north.
Yeah, kingfish went back to St. Pete.
Water. But that's what always happens is as soon as it warms up. The only good thing is if January holds its promise of another cold spell, we should be able to get a whole bunch of the kings and everything back down here. You know, if we can get a good week-long cold spell hit.
Yeah, it's got to last more than a couple days.
Yeah, it's got to be a five-day cold spell in order to get those fish to return south.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, fingers and toes crossed.
All right. Well, we're going to move on down to the east side. See you later, Dad.
See you later. Have fun, guys.
See you later.
East side. Somewhere between from Pirate Harbor up towards Alligator Creek.
Again, small redfish. Guys have been trying to get up underneath and fish the mangroves. If you've got enough water to do it, it's been working great. But they seem to be... hanging out on the outside of the bars a lot too, where they're finding a little bit more depth. Redfish don't seem to be liking the flats quite as much up there. I'm assuming that there's going to be some instances where you'll find tailing fish if you have a little bit of cloud cover or earlier or later in the day, but it's just been warm, so they've been looking for shade or places that they can get away.
Yeah, been a lot of scattered snook in there too, and a lot of little trout, but some of the bigger trout seem to be on the outside edge of the bar with a handful of undersized cobia mixed in there.
Okay.
So some guys have been getting pleasant surprise thinking they're going to catch a trout and reeling in, you know, a 30-inch cobia.
Yeah, and again, a few pompano over there. Haven't talked to guys who are actually skipping them, but I have talked to guys who've caught a handful just as incidentals while they're out there fishing, usually while they're fishing a popping cork trying to catch trout, which they're not catching.
And that goes back to what I was saying earlier about the pompano. People really forget how... well, a bobber will work for pompano because they're not really surface feeders or bottom feeders. Right. They're just kind of going through the middle, and that's actually a very, very effective way of fishing for pompano. Alligator Creek, Poacher's Cut, and anything up along the creek?
Crickets.
You heard anything in Alligator
Jack's
Creek?
About the only thing I've heard of.
Jacks. Again, some guys who are spotting smaller tarpon but not actually hooking them, and it's just been tough to be up in there. A few sheep's head, but nothing, you know, worth getting excited over, and just small snapper.
Just been too warm to get really good numbers of anything in there yet.
Yeah. All right.
Plus the weather's been so beautiful, I don't think anybody's really fishing in there, because usually this time of year it's blowing 100 miles an hour, and it's their
and it's cold
safe
and
place to hide.
Yeah, it's right. Cold and windy. And
We'll find out Saturday what kind of fish are in
right.
The creek.
If this front makes it down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's supposed to be in the upper 60s and blowing 20 knots. So we'll see then.
I got to get back to watching the Weather Channel. I've been watching some of the other news outlets lately. I got to get back to looking at the Weather Channel.
You got to do air quotes when you say news. You can't just say news anymore. You got to do this.
No, I go with the one that's at least 50% real news. I don't do
either. You're doing
99% of the other
or
ones.
You're drinking Kool-Aid. Your choice, man.
No, I said 50% real news. You know, there's only one that gives you half real news. The rest of them are 99% just ridiculous. So
National Enquirer.
Well, it's hard to believe that the National Enquirer is more believable than Time Magazine. When it got to that point, I'm just disillusioned. Okay, but So anyway, PGI Canals. We're going to look at Ponce de Leon Park.
Ponce de Leon's been a little quiet. You know, there's been some very small mangrove snapper being caught there. A couple good-sized sheep's head, but not any numbers. A couple small black drum and a couple bigger drum. The big thing there has been the jacks that have been coming and going through there. You know, same thing like Placide area. Mm-hmm. You know, you got those 8 to 12 pounders coming through in and out. It's been unusually quiet down there.
Now, if you'll get yourself off the pier and get out on that flat and start wading along the boat channel and casting back in towards, you got a decent chance at some redfish. There have been some reds that have been hanging out there looking for that deeper water. They're not really going up to where the guys are fishing on the pier, or they're going past and not biting while people are dropping all the tourist rigs for catfish on top of their heads. But if you're willing to wade out a little bit, then you have a real shot at going out and catching them.
The weird part about that next to that boat channel, I mean, it is very hard, very nice sand bottom, because that's what they dig out of the boat channel. And they always put it to the north.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that it's job security, because most of the current there comes from the north,
right,
and puts it back into where they dug it out of.
Right.
You know, and instead of putting it to the south, where there's actually a little, the current isn't as strong because of the deflection of the south side of the Punta Gorda Point.
I like to think that they put it to the north for me to make it easier for me to wade out there.
Yes, and I'm sure that's they had
that
in mind when they did that.
That was absolutely why they did that.
Yes, they said Josh needs a nice, safe place to walk.
Right.
You know,
fat
good
guys like hard sand.
All right, back up in the PGI canals. What's going on up there?
Tons of little tarpon. I mean, lots and lots of little tarpon. Guys are making themselves crazy trying to figure them out. You know, they're just throwing everything small at them and trying like heck. And then, of course, you got all the dock lights. You got all the snook all over them, too. So they've been enjoying that.
You know, I talked to some guys in there who have their dock lights, and they said they're not seeing the snook like they would expect to.
Mm-mm.
And they said they thought it was all this mullet kill that killed all their snook, and my snook are gone. These are my pet fish that I had for years. And I said, no, your fish are at the beach right now.
Yeah.
They'll come back in when they're done doing whatever they're doing.
I think a lot of them are moving around the canals. Snook are pretty big homebodies. Until they get the urge to spawn, they stay within about a mile of the house, but a mile's a big area. When they pick a spot, okay, I'm going to hang out here, they most snook, as far as they've tracked and looked at, will go about a half a mile one side or the other, or maybe a mile one side, if you're depending on what part of the range you're at. But still, it's a long ways.
Right, and I follow you on that, but with as many snook as the we're hearing about down at the beach and down on the docks, down around the ICW, I can't imagine that all of those are local fish. I think some of the ones that would normally be up here are hanging out down there, enjoying their extended Indian summer.
And snook are very temperate zone fish. They do not, they're not even supposed to be up by Tampa. It gets too cold too often for them.
Right.
That's the very end of their range. But with the water conditions and everything changing the way it has been over the last few years, they've really expanded their range until we get another big cold spell, and it wipes them back out again.
Exactly.
But the snook fishing I'm hearing is fair in the canals. It's not bad, but it's not great, but it's not bad.
Yeah, there's fish, but it's just not the numbers that a lot of people are expecting. Right. And we've got so many snowbirds who only are there part-time, and they expect to see big numbers of snook on their lights.
But it has to be cold in the canals to get the snook to want to hang out in the canals.
Right. So they'll be there. Settle down, guys.
It's like the manatees at the viewing center.
If this cold front comes through, there will be a whole bunch of them.
This is supposed to be literally a one-day cold front.
Really?
One hit and right back up.
Then it's not going to do any good. Yeah. Okay, Gilchrist Pier, anything happening there?
Couple jacks is all I heard about. It's been so quiet there lately.
And again, I've heard a couple of stingrays.
Woo.
Yep.
Fun for people who are used to catching them. They bend a rod.
They're really cool animals. I enjoy seeing them.
I can honestly say, if you're from Ohio or Missouri or Wisconsin and you've never caught a stingray, it is an amazing catch. Literally astounding, amazing to pull this thing out of the water. And we forget that, because after you do 10, 20, 30, 50, 200, it becomes a little, okay, this is, I didn't want this, I don't want to mess with it. But your first time you pull a stingray out of the water, that is one of the coolest things you can catch.
Definitely.
It really
is. It's such a crazy thing to see.
I mean,
as it's actually there alive and flopping around, it's like, wow.
And you know you're supposed to be afraid of it, but it's on the end of your rod, but you're very curious about it. You kind of want to touch it or, get the hook out. You want to do all these things. But in the back of your brain going, this thing can really hurt me.
Right.
So there's this fear and trepidation along with the excitement and adrenaline push of the whole thing. And your first stingray experience is one of the coolest things that will happen when you get to Florida. It really is. And everybody forgets that. And the one thing I always say about people, especially in the fishing industry, they forget where they start. And the first stingrays I caught, I mean, every once in a while I get a flashback of a memory of it. You know, it's the random thought, you know, but that's all I ever get is random thought. But it's, you know, there's, yeah. But I mean, it was exciting. It's, and, you know, spending time as a charter boat captain, you never want to go, oh, that a stingray. You always want to be excited about it because you forget somebody who's never been on saltwater before pulls in this amazing creature. And if you get a 2-footer or something on the first time, oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
That freaks them out, much less a 10-inch or 12-inch one, you know. I mean, it's just an amazingly cool creature. I just think they're astonishing. If you think, they fly through the water and have the ability to bury themselves in the sand.
I just want to know how they suction cup themselves to the sand.
That's what I mean. Think of what they're able to do. They can fly through the water and like a bird through the air, and then they go down to the bottom and all of a sudden shuffle, and they recess themselves under the sand.
Yeah.
And if you've got one on the line, it can really suction right to the bottom where you can just really not get them out. So I just think they're one of the coolest creatures on the planet, and they're very good eating too, by the way. Alligator Creek Reef, what's going on out there? Anything?
It's been very quiet there. There's been a few mangrove snapper and a couple sheep's head there. An oddball Spanish mackerel more on the southern end.
Yeah, mostly when we had those good, strong incoming tides that we're not going to have for a little while.
Yeah. It's been very quiet for normal, you know, unfortunately.
Okay, I had one guy say he caught a gag grouper out there. The one guy.
Now,
so,
did his gag grouper have a big old rounded paddly tail on him?
He actually,
you double checked it?
Yeah, he actually.
Okay.
No, I know him. He actually catches grouper.
All right.
Which is weird because I haven't heard of many of them either out there.
No, not
since
many.
The red tide went through, I haven't heard of much.
Yeah, the round paddle tail is the sign of a Goliath grouper or Jewfish, which you're not allowed to keep under any circumstances. A square or flat tail designates a possible legal catch if it's of appropriate size. What's going on in deep holes in the harbor?
Catfish. Lots and lots of catfish.
Hardheads or sails?
Both.
Now, see, you talk about guys. People getting jaded about things like stingrays.
The guys are catching them trolling, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, see, the guys are looking for Spanish and catching the sails, and a guy caught a hardhead while trolling, which surprised me because I've never heard of a hardhead hitting a lure. Sailcats doesn't surprise me. Hardhead, though?
Oh, you never caught hardheads on lures before?
You have?
Oh, yeah.
Did you snag it? Because you are notorious for catching
it. No, not this time. No.
Okay.
No. No, I've had hardheads. The thing that they usually eat for me are gold spoons.
Really?
Yeah.
But I've caught plenty of sailcats on gold spoons. I've never, ever caught a hardhead.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, like I was the path I was headed towards, people getting jaded about things like stingrays. I still enjoy catching sailcats. Sailcats are very hard fighters. They're very tough. They're the kind of fish that you hook into, and if you've got a good-sized one, you know, you're going to think that you've got a prized game fish on the line while you're fighting the thing. And
absolutely.
People will sit there and they'll enjoy the fight and the thing will be taken out drag. Oh, I've got a good red fish on. Oh, this is going to be great. And they get it up and it's a catfish. And what's the very first thing that comes out of their mouth is some cuss words. Every single time. Why? I mean, you hook this fish. You had an awesome time fighting it. It's a fish that's actually very edible, quite good. I mean, yeah, it's a little slimy, but nobody's perfect. You know, cut them a little slack.
I think the biggest thing is because of the danger factor, number one, because of having to mess with it and try to get the hook out of it.
Okay, but what about sharks? We get all excited about sharks. There's a danger factor
there.
It's
got a prestige to it, though.
I guess.
Put teeth on it like a shark, and then it might be super exciting.
Right.
But it is something we do take for granted, you know, and they are a great fight. But the thing that's always amazed me about a sail cat is how big they are, and yet they're so hollow, they really don't weigh much.
Right.
You would think you've got like a new world record catfish on, you know, it's going to be, oh, that's got to be a 20 pounder, and the thing barely weighs 4 pounds. You know, it's always, that's been one of the most bizarre fish to ever try to guess weights on, you know, when people show them to you, because you're like, that's a really good size sailcat, and you go, oh,
no,
2 pounds,
really.
You know.
But it's the Jesus fish.
That's a hardhead.
Is it the hardhead or is it
the hardhead?
The hardhead is the
Jesus.
The hardhead
is the crucifix.
Yeah, the hardhead is the crucifix, and you dry it out. And I used to have several of them around the store, but they all disappear over the years. You wouldn't think somebody would shoplift catfish skulls.
Yeah.
But
probably all those nuns that keep coming in here.
I don't think so. The only one I miss, the religious one I really miss, was the old Catholic priest. Remember the old skinny old guy, the old Catholic priest? Oh, he used to give me heck all the time. He was going to save me. He was just the greatest guy on the planet. The old Catholic priest used to come in here. I haven't seen him for years. I don't know if he's still
around.
I didn't
think about him until you just said that. It's been a long time.
Oh, yeah. He used to come in and I'd slip up and say something. Let's say PG rated.
Right.
he would get on me. I'm gonna save you yet. He was just one of the greatest people I've ever met.
Well, for his sake, let's hope there's fishing in heaven.
Yes.
Or purgatory or wherever he's at.
Oh, no, he definitely went to heaven. He's definitely one of the good guys. Have whatever you want with any religions, but that guy, for wherever he was going to go, he went. He was amazing. So anyway, bait reports is what we're looking for. We've heard about some white bait around the Placida Trestle, right?
Yep.
Any place else?
A little bit off the beaches in about 10 to 25 feet of water.
And from what I've seen, that's more of a mix of bait fish. I mean, all the little stuff, little blue runners out there, the cigar minnows, just kind of a random hodgepodge of bait fish in little pods, but it's very scattered. Nothing is tightly balled up at all until you get out to some of that deeper water where those guys were finding kingfish. They were finding tighter pods of Spanish sardines and some cigar minnows out there. But again, we're 30 miles out. So
right, 30 miles out. Anything in the harbor? Any pinfish anywhere? Anything?
Pinfish have been kind of scattered a little bit on the intercoastal side, but even our pinfish guy was saying he's been struggling with them, finding them the last couple days. I'm not sure what that's really about.
Well, we lost a lot of pins in the red tide, too.
Yeah, pins but just all of a sudden in the last couple days, though, they kind of all of a sudden scattered a little bit. I don't know if the water temperature came up that extra degree or two and they decided to move out to deeper water or what.
Well, those guys are little jerks, and it wouldn't surprise me a bit if they ran out to 5 feet. We're going to have a harder time getting them.
Yeah.
Now, there have been a lot of little pins, too little for most people to be using for bait. If you want to try a dip net or something like that and try concentrating them with chum, you can go out there and catch the little quarter-size pinfish all day long.
Where would that be?
Pretty much anywhere that you have relatively healthy grass. I'd say keep it to less than a foot and a half of water. And you can concentrate them with chum just like you can with the bigger ones, and then just sweep your net through the grass.
Okay.
Been catching a few mud minnows that way, too.
Really?
Yeah.
That's something we don't do a lot of, or hear a lot about here on this side of the state. You get up around Jacksonville and going north, and even some in the panhandle, a lot of mud minnows. But really not many here.
There's actually a bunch of those in Coral Creek, and some of them are pretty good size, the Gulf Killifish. I've been out there on that Coral Creek pier and caught a few dozen within the space of an hour or so on little tiny hair hooks with little tiny pieces of shrimp.
Yeah.
And I'm talking good size ones, 4 to 5 inches.
Very cool. I would suggest that's probably a number 10 or 12 hook.
I don't know what size it was. It was dinky. Is what size it was.
All right.
With a long, long shank.
What we're going to do here is switch over and the freshwater. What's going on freshwater around the area?
Well, guys have been catching some bass, but I think that a lot of that is getting weird because the fish are starting to feel like spawning and then feel like not spawning. I think they're confused as much as the saltwater fish are by the incongruity between photo period and temperature. It's kind of throwing them for a loop. The crappie are having the same problem. Guys are catching a few crappie, but they're not catching them like they expect to because they're not in the places they expect them to be. Those fish are still more in where you'd expect to find them in the summer. They're looking for deeper spots, and they're not grouped up tight.
Okay. What are they catching on? Anybody? I know shiners are doing good.
Shiners are doing really good. the frog bite's been working good in the evening time, but the early morning and middle of the day bite, guys have been kind of buying a mixed barrage. Some guys are buying spinner baits. A couple of guys are buying just worms and rigging them up both Texas rig and wacky style. You know, it's been kind of a mixed barrage. I think, you know, like Josh said, they're kind of screwed up and not sure what to do. So everything's kind of working.
So, you know, crankbaits, spinnerbaits, whatever.
Yeah.
The crappie bite. What's going on with crappie?
Well, trying to catch crappie, the guys who have been most successful with it are guys who are using drop shot rigs where they're putting their sinkers down on the bottom and then fishing a soft plastic bait or a live minnow above that sinker, maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet, and then dropping it into the deepest water in the area they can find. Those fish are looking for thermal refuge. They're looking for someplace that's a little bit cooler. In the canals, if you can get up underneath the bridges, not only do you have deeper water there, but you also have shade, which is advantageous. But again, don't expect huge numbers. This is
now, the one thing I have heard about is the pepper trees are finally starting to attract the crappie that, you know, they should be attracting it this year.
Yeah, usually they're there all last month and not much until
it wasn't
just
much.
Recently.
I've heard a couple more bunching up. Crappie like the pepper trees because they have all those, you know, branches coming down into the water, all mm-hmm. the roots. It's a maze and a jungle in there. And
almost like a mangrove, but in fresh water.
Yeah, they actually have really adapted to the pepper tree aspect of South Florida living.
Now, on the plus side, the tilapia and Mayan cichlid bite has been fantastic. They love this kind of weather. This is their tropical fish. So the warmer it is, the happier they are. And, you know, they've been going off. Tilapia are not on the beds right now, but they're still actively pursuing all types of different natural baits. Guys are catching them on chunks of worms. I imagine that the new freshwater baits you've got in here, the wax worms would probably do real well, and the butterworms would probably be a good choice also. Tilapia like little squirmy things a lot better than a lot of people realize they do.
Especially at the right time of year.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like they go in little spurts.
No,
but the little stuff is more consistent.
I would do it more under a bobber.
Yeah, under a bobber is great because you don't want your bait to be sitting all the way down in the bottom. A lot of the places tilapia like have muddy bottoms and your bait will kind of get lost down there. So I'll run under a bobber, but just have it suspended a little bit above the bottom. You don't want it to be suspended, you know, right below the surface. You want to get within a foot or so of the bottom if you can.
Okay.
And for the Mayan cichlids, you can still use natural baits. They'll still eat worms. They like to eat a little bit closer to the top than the tilapia do, but I really prefer catching them on artificial baits. Throwing a beetle spin or a little tiny Rapala is a great way to catch those fish. You can throw the little rattle traps if you want to, but in a lot of the shallower places where we like to catch them, those rattle traps run too deep too fast, so I prefer something that dives down from a floating position rather than sinks.
Okay.
Like that.
Anything else we forgot to go over today, boys?
Not a whole lot.
Anything that you wanted to add to this, Mr. Josh?
I just wanted to see how long that could go on before you would stop me.
You
weren't going to stop me at all?
You could, no. I really hadn't planned on it.
I could just, for as long as I wanted to?
Yeah, just keep right going with it.
I think after this front goes through, if it's going to blast through as quick as they say it is, I think that offshore fishing is still going to be amazing.
I mean, it does make me rethink, you know, putting your Josh the Fish Coach logo with the, you know, link on it. You know, right next to there. I'm not sure that. But if when you clicked on this, you saw the area fishing report, and which takes you back over to the place by place. And this broadcast does correspond with the place by place. Next to that, you'll see Josh the Fish Coach. And Josh, it's kind of self-explanatory. He goes out and helps you learn how to fish and tie knots and catch fish and shows you where to cast and all the rest of the cool stuff that goes on down here in South Florida.
Yeah, it's an educational experience. It's not the same as a fishing charter. It's more about, you know, teaching a man how to fish rather than giving a man a fish. That's what I do.
Do this from land or in somebody's boat.
We can go out in the boat. We can go from land. We can fish off the pier. We can fish off your dock. I even had one guy who literally just wanted me to come to his house, go through all of his tackle with him, and show him the stuff that he could use down here and the stuff that was going to be less useful. Show him how to tie a couple knots and basically tell him what he needed to get to be ready to fish down here. You know, the guy's fished up north his whole life. Comes down here, everything's different. What do I do? How do I get started?
And the guys from the northeast are the biggest ducks out of water.
Definitely.
You know, yeah. If you're used to fishing in the Atlantic or up around New York, Boston, you know, anywhere, Jersey, all that whole area up there, the fishing we do here is very different. Until you get in the Gulf of Mexico, then you can do pretty much the same stuff.
Right, yeah, right. You can run your downrigger and all that stuff.
But up here in the harbor, it is so different than what they did. Whereas the guy coming from bass fishermen from Illinois or wherever would have a much easier transition into the flats.
The easiest guys that I've had explaining it to, the guys who get it the fastest, are the guys who've done a lot of bass fishing in rivers. Because we have tidal flow here, and they're used to fishing current. They understand how current is going to affect where a fish will be. It's the exact same thing here, except our rivers flow two different directions, depending on what the tide happens to be doing.
And that's another hard thing for people to get into, is to figure out, you know, they say, well, what do the fish do on high tide? What do they do on a low tide? I say, you already know that. What happens when a lake gets full of water? Where do the fish go?
Right.
When you get a lot of rains and the lake fills way up over its banks, fish go up into the grasses and the trees. What happens when the water goes down? They go back into the deeper spot.
Yep. But it's harder for the lake fishermen because the water changes, you know, twice
direction.
A day,
yeah,
instead
direction.
Of, you know, just being over the course of a few weeks or a few months.
And it's harder to imagine it's basically the same thing, but it just happens all the time here rather than every once in a while in a lake.
Right.
So, other than that, anything else we should be going over? Fish and Frank here in the chair. We got Robert over there in the chair. Anything, Mr. Josh?
Well, in addition to listening to your show, I'd appreciate it if they would listen to our show that we do on Saturday mornings. We have a radio waterline that Robert is good enough to co-host with me and Captain Mike Myers, one of our local charter captains. And we go from 7 to 9 on Saturday mornings on Kix Country 92.9 FM. If you're not here in the area and you can't hear it that way, you can always go to RadioWaterline.com and listen to it there. We have every show going back almost 3 years, and please don't go listen to the first one because we sound ridiculous.
I'll see if I can find a way of putting a link here on that to get to the Radio Waterline. Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and Josh the Fish Coach Olive, the publisher of the Waterline magazine, host of
Waterline Radio.
I mean, he's just so many things to so many people.
A whistle, you know? And a pair of kids, that's what I need.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Man of many hats.
Yeah.
So,
thank you, Frank. I appreciate you having me. I'll talk to you later, Frank. Bye.
Okay. Goodbye, boys and girls. And that wasn't my idea, folks. All right. We'll see you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.